After many in the GOP forecast a big win for Mitt Romney, it turns out he received fewer votes than John McCain did in 2008. So, what ails the Republican Party? River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This Politics Wednesday, we use a week of hindsight to tackle some of the biggest questions from the aftermath of the 2012 election. Chief among them, how did the GOP so miscalculate their prospects? And has it caused any rethinking in the Republican Party? Our analysts this hour, Tim Hagel of the University of Iowa, and Arnie Arneson to give us the view from New Hampshire. What would you prescribe for an ailing GOP? Discussion after this news. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Politics Wednesday. Excited to jump into it 1 week after the election. And after many in the GOP forecast a big win for Mitt Romney, it turns out he received fewer votes than John McCain did in 2008. We're going to use this hour, a lot of it anyway, to use a week of hindsight to tackle some of the questions raised in the aftermath of the 2012 election. For instance, how did the GOP so miscalculate their prospects, and has it caused any rethinking in the Republican Party? Our analysts this hour, Tim Hagel of the University of Iowa, where he is Associate Professor of Political Science. Tim Hagel, welcome back to our program.
Thanks.
Arnie Arneson joins us, New Hampshire political analyst, former Democratic gubernatorial candidate, by phone from New Hampshire. Hi, Arnie. Great.
It's a pleasure from that state that elected all women. Oh, excuse me.
Ooh, we'll give you a chance to talk
we'll get to that too.
Yes, we will talk about that. We want to have a listener participation this hour, as we love to have on our Politics Wednesday. We thought this would be a good approach this hour. In five words or less, whether you're Republican, Democrat, or independent, what would you prescribe the Republican Party do in light of these general election results? Five words or less. You can call us 1-866-780-9100. Email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook, or tweet us at IPR Talk. Let me start with you, Tim Hagel. From your perspective, where do you see the GOP in the aftermath of this election?
Is this a five words or less?
No, you get multiples of five.
Actually, I can say it, and actually can do it in three words. Don't be hasty. I think one of the things that we saw, even election night, especially once Ohio was called for President Obama, was that the finger pointing and the laying of blame began almost immediately. And certainly there's some that is, you know, justified, and folks have to take a look at it. But I think that the best thing to do would be to wait until we see all of the votes certified, and then start taking a look at the turnout, start taking a look at where the votes occurred, whether it's demographics, whether it's geographics, whether it's something else, age of the population, whatever it happens to be, and try to figure out what exactly the problem was in terms of reaching out to one group, one state, one age group, whatever it happens to be. And I think that right now folks are jumping in a little bit too quick, maybe because it seems obvious what the problems were. But if you dig deeper, we might find it something else.
We don't know enough already about the women's vote, the Latino vote, the African-American vote.
You know, there are certainly problems there for the Republicans, given what we saw in terms of the gender gap, talking about women, or that many more Hispanics seem to go for the Democrats than what was expected. But the underlying problem, why did that happen? I don't think that's clear just from looking and saying, oh, well, you have to do this, you have to do that. The way I was thinking of it is the conversation between Democrats and Republicans almost immediately started along these lines. Democrats say, hey, you guys weren't good enough. You have to be more like us. Some Republicans say, mm-hmm. Okay. And then the Democrats under their breath say, sucker.
Okay. Well, actually, the couple comments here already on our Facebook page, are the five words or less, what would you prescribe for the Republican Party? Catherine writes on our Facebook page, accept it and move on. Lydia writes, evolve with the times. Let's go to Arnie Arneson out in New Hampshire. Your view from that state, what tipped the balance in favor of Obama over a former Massachusetts governor?
Well, I think you're talking to a state that may have had a history of being very conservative, but its conservative Republican politics were blended in with very much of a libertarian sensibility. And by that, I mean when it came to social issues, the Republican Party was so out of touch with whatever was left of Republicans in my state. And for women who really felt like the target was on their back, it was a wake-up call that, you know, whether it was abortion, whether it was birth control, whether it was a new term called legitimate rape, whether it was the Affordable Care Act, all those things, I think, really sort of sent the message that was out of touch, mm-hmm. and this was not going to work. So from the women's perspective, you saw a significant women's gap. But what I will tell you is this is really fascinating. We keep talking about women generically, but it turned out that while men, white men, voted overwhelmingly for Republicans, so did white women.
Mm.
All right, so I want people to understand that there really was sort of a definitive line, and perhaps the white women, not as dramatic as the men, clearly not as dramatic. I mean, my state is a perfect example. We're like 98% white, and Mitt Romney didn't win, and we elected virtually all females to the top of our ticket. We sent them to Congress. We sent them to the governor's office. So in liberal or more liberal New England, it didn't work. But I think there's also a story here, and that is a story of the changing color and demographic of America, and that you can't then have surrogates go out and play the racist card. And again, I'll come back to the state of New Hampshire.
Who was playing the racist card?
Well, John Sununu. John Sununu, when Colin Powell endorsed Barack Obama for the second time, what did you hear from the co-chair of the Mitt Romney campaign, my former governor, was that he used the racist card. When John Sununu was talking about Barack Obama in the first debate, he talked about the fact that he was lazy. And there were those kinds of terminologies that didn't help to sort of reinforce this message that the Republican Party understands that they have to have a message and a bridge to the changing demographic in America, which is no longer going to be white, but it is going to be browning. It is going to be younger in certain ways. And they need to figure out how they have the conversation and not alienate them by suggesting things like voluntary, you know,
self-deportation.
Self-deportation. Thank you very much.
Arnie, let's have Tim Hagel jump in here.
Yeah, I could remember Sununu saying the business about Colin Powell, and you know, part of the problem there is that at least that one statement, I wouldn't characterize that necessarily as racist. If he was saying that, now maybe he was right or maybe he was wrong, and you can agree or disagree, but if he was saying that, well, maybe Colin Powell supported President Obama because of his race, well, that's not racist on part of Sununu to suggest that, because race could have been a factor in Colin Powell's decision. We don't know. Mm-hmm. In terms of the lazy thing, well, look, there are certain words that, of course, you need to be careful about when you're talking in any conversation, because race is such a hot button issue. But just because you use that word doesn't necessarily mean it's racist. But on the other hand, when you use those words, it does mean that the Democrats often will jump on it with both feet and make that accusation. And then, of course, that does tend to polarize the electorate in various ways, which often tends to be to the advantage of Democrats.
Well, let me just frame this a little bit for you. My state, the state of New Hampshire, was the last state to embrace Martin Luther King's birthday in the United States. We had a former governor before Sununu in the 70s who believed and supported the concept of apartheid in South Africa. So you have to understand there was this sort of uncomfortable history in New Hampshire because we did, and I'll use this expression, which it also could be taken wrong, dragged our knuckles when it came to trying to figure out what to do. And I'm talking about the cavemen when it came to sort of embracing a change in America. And then John Sununu, more often than not, always tended to marginalize, not based on policy, but based on sort of these personality traits that he decided were offensive or he could play to his white base. Mm-hmm. That's unfortunate. And I think that didn't help Mitt Romney. And what clearly didn't help Mitt Romney is that he then became conflated with Congressman Aiken, with Murdoch, and all those things that reinforced very much of a Democratic message, which was a message to women saying, you know what, you are a second-class citizen with this group. And if you want to continue, you need to have them change or at least support us and send the message to the Republicans that women are part of the franchise and they're part of this country.
Arnie, your comment about dragging knuckles reminds me of this quote that I noted in an op-ed piece for Politico. George W. Bush advisor Karen Hughes wrote, if another Republican man says anything about rape other than it is horrific, violent crime. I want to personally cut out his tongue. The college-age daughters of many of my friends voted for Obama because they were completely turned off by Neanderthal comments, like the suggestion of legitimate rape. Tim Hagel, Arnie raised this too, but do you think the Aiken thing, the comment, the Murdoch comment, does that rub off on the Republican Party as a whole, on the candidate? Does it brand the entire party in a diminished way?
It shouldn't, because as particularly with the Aiken comment, Republicans basically backed away from him extremely quickly. They had wanted nothing to do with what he said. It was an incredibly stupid statement.
Shut off funding completely.
You know, they completely shut that down. But when you have somebody that makes that kind of comment, then it provides an opportunity for the other side, in this case the Democrats, to really exploit that. And then they ran with it. And then, of course, when you have a second person make an incredibly stupid comment that, you know, despite whatever positives this person might have had otherwise, when you make that kind of stupid comment, again, it's the kind of a thing that diminishes not only that person, but then the candidate at the top of the ticket.
Okay, we're looking for five words or less. Your prescription for the Republican Party in light of the general election results, 1-866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or send us an email, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Another from our Facebook, Paul writes, move to the center, inclusive. Let's go to Steve by phone. Steve, you've got five words for us?
Yes, and I have to change it up. It's involve more minorities.
Yes.
The Republicans are so out of touch with my age group and the amount of different types of people we have in this country. They are solely focused on a certain select few, mm-hmm. and they lost a lot of votes because of it. I am a registered Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
I sway both ways, though. I look at all of our options, and so I would say I sway more independent type of voter. Okay,
mm-hmm.
But the Republicans really need to focus on revamping their plan because they cannot exclude these people.
Okay. Thank you, Steve, from Seymour. Interesting, even on immigration, for instance, one that affects minorities, comprehensive immigration reform, a subject that some Republicans, like George W. Bush, once supported, no longer do. In exit polls, we saw from this election, 65% said illegal immigrants should be offered a chance to apply for legal status. And since the election, we've seen GOP leaders, Lindsey Graham, John McCain, signaling some support for a comprehensive immigration reform. Tim Hagel, is this perhaps a chance for the GOP to change a bit, to shift a little bit on this issue, and thereby also pick up minority votes?
You know, I think so. And let me just say the last thing in response to the caller. It's not that the GOP purposefully excludes minorities. They're certainly welcoming of minorities. The problem is how to reach out to folks in terms of standing by the principles they want to, in terms of, entrepreneurial spirit and things of that nature, and get that message across. And that's where, at least at one level, they're having a problem. In terms of immigration reform, sure, many GOP folks want to have some form of immigration reform, comprehensive. The problem is always what to do with the folks in the country now who are here illegally, because you don't want to reward them for basically breaking the law and effectively punish the people who follow the law and have waited and, mm-hmm. you know, their turn and so forth. And that's really the sticking point. So at least at a certain level, folks can agree, okay, secure the border and then maybe deal with the question of people here already in a different way, whether it's a path to citizenship or something else.
The president due within minutes to talk about many issues during his first press conference since the election. One of those will be expected to be immigration reform. Arnie Arneson, do you see this as one of the major issues that there seems to be a consensus forming around?
I think there's a consensus forming around immigration. I think there's a consensus beginning to form around, although the Republicans will have a difficult time with this, with taxes. What you saw with Grover Norquist's pledge, Grover Norquist no longer has a controlling number of votes in Congress with his pledge. Over a dozen Republicans refused to take the Norquist pledge on taxes. A number of Republicans are walking away from the fact that they did take the Norquist pledge on taxes. You saw majorities in both the Democratic Party as well as the Republican Party, as they did the exit polls, saying they thought that we needed to raise taxes on the rich. You even heard Mitt Romney make this throwaway line during one of the debates about how we should say, okay, let's limit deductions to $20,000. Under Grover Norquist's pledge, that's a tax increase. I don't believe Mitt Romney would see it that way. So I think when it comes to dealing with the deficit, with making investments, I think taxes are back on the table, and you see it with Barack Obama saying right out of the box, where before the election he was talking to Boehner about $800 million that he wanted to raise revenue. He is now up to $1.6 trillion. That's what he wants in revenue over the course of the next couple of years. I think he has a good shot at getting it. Republicans, their base say, you know what, raise taxes on the rich. So do the Democrats. What's their problem?
Tim Hagel.
So one thing there that was interesting in what you said was you're talking about more investments, which basically means more spending. And that's part of the problem here is that when you raise the taxes on the rich, that you're just going to have more spending. That even though once in a while President Obama will mention about something going to deficit reduction, it's not going to happen. I just can't imagine it. Plus, all of that, the increase in taxes really doesn't get offset by additional spending cuts. And that was the problem with a lot of times Democrats talk about how, well, Reagan raised taxes, but he was part of a deal that supposedly spending cuts were supposed to follow, and they never did. And that's one of the reasons why Republicans are reluctant to fall prey to that same sort of bait and switch again.
So let me just make a suggestion here. For example, we're just looking at what happened to the devastation in Sandy in one of the most urban areas. We're looking at Governor Cuomo asking for $30 billion to help rebuild an entire devastated New York. We have Staten Island. We have New Jersey. Those are investments. They're also necessities. You can't put them off. You can't say mañana. But here's the interesting thing about those investments.
Wait, that's not an investment unless you're talking about investing in infrastructure that would have allowed you to be better prepared in the first place. That's just, you know, it's spending. I'm not saying it's bad, but that's the problem is that you can always say that there's something good about spending, and people always do. The problem is that if you are going into debt every time you add to the spending column, you're going to have problems, and that's where we're at now.
May I make a point here? Let me just make a point.
Quickly, Arnie, please, and then we'll move on for something else.
Just real quickly, when you make this investment, whether it's in infrastructure or the repairs that you're going to see happening in the Northeast, you are going to see for every dollar you spend in infrastructure investment, you create $6 in the private sector. Those are jobs. Those are taxes. Those are revenues. Those have a long-term impact. It is a win-win. You improve what is necessary for business and commerce and the economy. You make an investment that also turns out to stimulate investment in the private sector. We are looking still at a relatively high unemployment, especially in construction. You're going to get those people hired back. That helps states, that helps counties, that helps families, and it helps the country as a whole.
Okay.
That's the kind of investment I think is a win-win for the United States.
Arnie and Tim, I wanted to move on to this, back to some of the five words that our listeners are offering. Prescriptions for the Republican Party in light of the general election results that didn't work out very well for the GOP and in most cases, Heidi and Dave write these five words: compromise, 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 compromise. Ray writes, support Ron Paul ideologies. Laura writes, extremist posturing alienated moderate Republicans. And Joel writes, stop listening to Fox News. Interestingly, one of the most memorable sound bites from election night came from Fox News. Here is Karl Rove on election night arguing with Fox News' Megyn Kelly about the decision to call Ohio for President Obama, making him the winner of the presidential election. This is after Megyn Kelly walked back to talk with people on Fox's decision desk on air. She talked to them about why they called the state and the race for Obama. Here's what ensued after that.
Talk to Arnim Mishkin, Chris Dyerwald, Michael Barone's back there.
They're very smart guys. They're very smart guys. I'm just saying that in terms of public perception, it looks a little odd for us to be making a call with 991 votes.
But you know how the science works. They know the counties and they know the expected outcome,
And look, they've got a bigger data set than I do. But I'm sitting here saying I know Cuyahoga. of those 258,000 votes, it's going to be 70-30 in all likelihood. But in the Hamilton ones, depending on what's left out, it could be 60-40 the other way.
They didn't seem to think it was going to be that much in Hamilton.
They're pretty confident that back there, Carl, but we'll keep on going back and forth.
Okay, Fox News with Carl Rove, Megyn Kelly, they're back and forth on election night. Let me ask you, Tim Hagel, considering that Fox News, people like Carl Rove, Dick Morris, others were off massively in predicting a GOP victory here. What do you think are the repercussions for Carl Rove? Crossroads GPS, hundreds of millions of dollars invested in conservative causes, not much to show. What are the repercussions for him, for instance?
Well, he certainly caught a lot of flack over the last week or so because of not only that particular exchange that he had, but also, as you indicated, that the money that they invested was not apparently invested wisely. And it's easy to criticize folks after the fact for that. But I think that the problem goes beyond that, that to a certain extent you have to look at, and as I was saying before the show started, that I'm waiting to see when the final votes are tallied to start looking at the data and seeing where the votes are in terms of, again, geography or groups or whatever, and sort of see what the problem was. And at a certain level, it as I said weeks before the election, that you should basically forget the polls and work on turnout. And that's certainly what the Obama campaign had been doing, not just the weeks before the election, but years before the election. They had been, you know, priming their supporters and getting people lined up. And so that operation basically saved them. And that's not what happened in the GOP, that they were relying too heavily on the enthusiasm gap, which was there, but they forgot that 2012 wasn't 2010. In a presidential election year, you've got to work a lot harder to get your people to the polls, and that didn't happen.
Arnie Arneson, how did this miscalculation happen in your view?
Well, I will quote Bobby Jindal. I think that's more appropriate when he said, "We have the stupid party." This is Bobby Jindal referring to his Republican Party. We've got to make sure that we're not the party of big business, big banks, big Wall Street bailouts, and big corporate loopholes, big anything. And I think that's part of the problem, too, is that the perception by a lot of people, even Republicans, and this is Bobby Jindal describing his own party, and if that is his sense of what was wrong with the message coming out of the November election, it's not me saying it. It's him saying it. And he was hearing that in many, many places. I don't know if he has an answer for that, but I know, if nothing else, it's a great headline for that. The other thing I also want to point out is that what happened in Wisconsin and what happened in Ohio with a lot of unions was a real wake-up call to a lot of union families. Unions are kind of interesting, especially the firefighters and the cops. They tend to vote overwhelmingly for Republicans. And even though everyone casts this sort of idea that they all move like a ship and they all go vote Democrat, that's historically not true. But the assault on public sector unions, I think, really also sent a wake-up call. And in New Hampshire, one of the messages coming out after the election, because we also had an attempt to pass a right to work and to sort of have this anti-union agenda, was the Republican Party said, "We're getting off this union kick." That may be true in New Hampshire. It may not be true nationally. But the message was, look what you woke up. Look what you organized. The state of Ohio, why did it swing for Barack Obama? Because the unions were working Ohio for a long time.
Okay,
they had that, and I think that's important, too, that you have to add that to your mix.
Kendall in the Quad Cities, you have a quick five-word answer for your prescription for the Republican Party before we go to a break?
Yeah, it was like a candidate, or elect a candidate that everybody likes. I mean, they went through the whole process of, they had six candidates originally where, you know, they all had their time point where everybody really enjoyed them, and they just kind of crushed everybody's moment to rise to glory over Mitt Romney. And pretty much everybody already said right at the beginning they didn't like Mitt Romney. So
okay. Find ones people like. That's a good point for us to take up in our second half when we come back. Thank you. Kendall dialed 1-866-780-9100. Maybe a question when we come back. Could anyone in the GOP primary have fared better than Mitt Romney? Do we put this defeat at the feet of Mitt Romney or at the GOP? What's your opinion? Your prescription for the Republican Party going forward in light of the general election results? 1-866-780-9100. Tim Hagel with us of the University of Iowa. Arnie Arneson with The View from New Hampshire. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. Back with
with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This is Politics Wednesday. Tim Hagel with us at the University of Iowa. Arnie Arneson with a view from New Hampshire, political analyst, former Democratic gubernatorial candidate. We're asking you this hour, in five words or less, what is your prescription for the Republican Party in light of the general election results? 1-866-780-9100, River to River at iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Arnie, Tim, we have a lot of people wanting to get in with their five words. Let's go to the phones right away. Let's go to Craig. Craig is in Missouri Valley in western Iowa, I believe. Hi, Craig.
Hi.
Go ahead, sir. What are your five words?
My five words are, do not compromise your values.
Explain that a little bit, Craig. Oh, we're having a hard time hearing Craig.
For example, we're seeing so many Republicans turning their back on, turning their back on our values and compromising our values.
What is a value or two that you see being compromised?
Like taxing the wealthy.
Mm-hmm.
Like taxing the wealthy.
You're saying a value is not to tax the wealthy, and you're standing behind that.
Well, no, it's the idea that they talk about everyone paying their fair share, and they attack the wealthy.
Mm-hmm.
What about the 50 million low-income Americans who pay little or no taxes? They're Americans, too. They should be paying their fair share. Yeah, I was looking around. I kept hearing this horn honking, and I honestly didn't see. I'm looking around. I didn't see it until I pulled out, and there he was. He was on this.
Okay, Craig, we're going to move on. We've got a lot of people with other five words. Thanks for your five words and your explanation there. Karen in Davenport, your five words, Karen.
Get over Cold War mentality.
Get over Cold War mentality. Thank you, Karen. Let's go to Meg in Des Moines.
Yes, my five words were drop the archaic social agenda.
Okay, Meg, thank you. Very good. I wonder if we can tie these up together with the question that we asked before the break to you, Arnie and Tim. Was this defeat, we put it at the feet of Mitt Romney or at the Republican Party? Tim Hagel, what do you think?
Well, again, my preference would be to wait and sort of take several moments, weeks, to sort of think things through. But I think that at a certain level, you can probably say it was Mitt Romney in the sense that his operation was supposed to make sure that it got its supporters to the polls, and that didn't happen. If you're asking about Mitt Romney as a candidate, I don't think so. That certainly he could have done better in certain ways, but I'm not sure that anybody else that was in the Republican field would have done much better, that they all had weaknesses as well. And regardless of who the nominee was going to be, it was going to be somebody who was going to be attacked fairly rigorously on the part of the Democrats, who of course already had their nominee in President Obama, so they had a lot longer time to basically define whoever the candidate for the Republicans emerged.
Arnie Arneson, would another candidate have mattered here?
Well, I want to talk a little bit about Mitt Romney because he was referred to as an etch-a-sketch, but I think really what he was a mirror. And he mirrored what the Republicans wanted to have said. He mirrored what Republicans believed. He mirrored all those things. It may not have been Mitt Romney, but no one really knows who Mitt Romney is. But he was a fabulous mirror. And the problem is he lost. Did he lose because he didn't have enough money? He had plenty of money. Did he lose because he didn't have enough time? He actually had lots of time. Did he lose because he didn't say what Republicans believed? He did. Maybe you didn't trust him, but if nothing else, he was saying everything that basically sort of fit into their platform. He even chose Paul Ryan, the Tea Party darling, the person with the numbers and the budget. And despite all that, he lost. And so I'm not sure another candidate could have done as well because I don't know anyone who could have been a better mirror on the party That means the party needs to look at itself and decide what's working and what's not working if they are going to be an alternative to the Democratic Party, which frankly has moved very much to the center.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if this strategy that Mitt Romney had during the primary to move to the right to capture the nomination and then become more moderate, that's a tried and true formula. Going forward, do you see that an alternative to that for candidates in the future, Tim Hagel?
Well, it's always difficult. Well, I shouldn't say always. It's more difficult now to do that than it used to be because you have 24-hour, 7-day-a-week, you know, all the time news and people following not just on cable television and various sorts, but reporters that are tweeting events constantly. You don't have to wait for the report that maybe gets filtered through later. You get all this stuff all the time. And so when you have debates or events in places like Iowa and New Hampshire, and as much as we follow it very closely in those states, places people in other places get to hear about it in real time too. And so you have to be very careful about changing your positions on particular issues because you'll get called on it. And that's one of the things that Democrats pounced on for Mitt Romney.
Five words or less, your prescription for the Republican Party after the general election results. Steve writes, country first, not the caucus. Mary in Cedar Rapids says, accept the Affordable Care Act, what has become known as Obamacare. I think that's a done deal, Mary. In fact, tomorrow on this program, we'll talk about how now that health care reform is the law of the land, how health care will change in Iowa. That's tomorrow. We'll focus on that during the hour here on River to River. Tricia writes, negotiation, compromise, not four-letter words. Those are her approximately five words as a prescription. I wonder if we can look at the second term, President Obama's second term, and ask each of you the changes you see in the second Obama administration. Arnie Arneson, does this president seek compromise or behave as if he has a mandate on many of these issues since he won't be seeking reelection?
No, I don't think Barack Obama acts like he ever has a mandate. That's not his persona. I think he really does want to have compromise. I do think that he wants to move forward now that the Affordable Care Act is basically, to some extent, a fait accompli. In fact, if you look at the numbers, only 33% of Americans have real concerns about the Affordable Care Act. That means he also has a majority of the American people who say, just fix it, just move forward. I do see immigration being a huge, huge issue for him. I also see climate change. And whatever happened at the end of this election cycle, Hurricane Sandy pointed to a lot of things, but it also pointed to the fact that we're seeing the tides increasing by a foot, and that foot makes a huge difference when you have a hurricane. And I think that you will see a stronger environmental agenda. I think you will see a stronger and more articulate agenda on immigration. I think Republicans are very supportive of that immigration conversation because they see that as the ticket for their future. And climate change is going to be interesting. It'll be fascinating for Iowa because, you know, Iowa has its wind turbines. That's a story for climate change. And yet, you know, Iowa also understands that they want to look at, you know, alternatives to things like, you know, to oil and gas and all those other things. So it'll be fascinating. But I do think that those are the two areas in which he's going to move ahead. And he's going to use jobs as his framework as he talks about anything. Every sentence will begin with jobs. The middle of the sentence will be a job, and job will end the sentence.
Tim Hagel, what do you see in the second Obama administration?
Well, Arnie certainly laid out the Democratic wish list there. But in terms of the very first part of that, whether Obama thinks he has a mandate, certainly he does. That's what he basically came out on, at least on the issue of taxes. He just laid it out and said, look, this is what the people voted for. They elected me. And so this is what I'm not going to compromise on. And he's basically he's got the controlling position because if he does nothing, the taxes go up and he's going to be able to blame the Republicans. And
yes,
Harry Reid in the Senate is going to be able to give him cover on that because if the House Republicans do vote something out, they can just let it die in the Senate. Taxes go up, Republicans get blamed. So Republicans are in a pretty tough position.
In fact, just to back up what you're saying, Tim Hagel, this is a new a Pew survey. 53% of Americans, this is post-election, 53% of Americans said Republicans in Congress would be more to blame in that instance if they fail to reach an agreement and we go off the fiscal cliff.
Right.
29% say that Obama would be more to blame. 10% say both the president and Republicans would share the blame.
Yeah, exactly. And again, it's not, you know, whether it is or isn't the blame, it's always the perception. And certainly the president will make sure that he blames the Republicans as much as he can.
Well, okay, after fiscal cliff, still with you, Tim Hagel, immigration, Arnie pointed to, climate change. Do you see other issues there being addressed by this administration, by this Congress?
I think that immigration is one that's also going to be a pressing issue, in no small part because, again, from what we were talking about before, GOP sort of reexamining, or at least elements in the GOP reexamining that issue, some talking about amnesty and or other ways to deal with it, and so that both parties are now starting to think about more closely. So that should be something that should be on the table as well.
Mm, to follow up on the health care comments, here's what John Boehner said. He's not giving up on repealing Obamacare. While Obamacare is the law of the land, he says, it is costing us jobs and threatening our health care. That was, I guess, Boehner's spokesman, Kevin Smith. Speaker Boehner and House Republicans remain committed to repealing the law. And this is an interview with the Huffington Post. It would be on the table. So not giving up there. Let's talk a little bit about the changed Senate today. In a widely expected move, the independent senator-elect Angus King of Maine announced he'll join the Democratic Senate caucus. That brings the Democrats to 55 in their Senate majority in the new Congress, convening in January. That position, filling the vacated seat by centrist Republican Olympia Snowe. I wonder how that changes things with a larger Democratic majority in the Senate, Arnie. How do you see that?
That means you only have to massage 5 Republicans. That's what that means. Because it's all about 60. It's all about 60. They have never used the filibuster so much as we've seen happen in the last couple of years. It is now about a supermajority to get anything out of the United States Senate. There really should be a conversation about whether this makes sense, but I'm not sure anyone wants to lead that conversation. And as a result, it really is about looking to the 5 or 6 Republicans who you can have a conversation with about things that are very, very important and go beyond partisan politics. And, I mean, it helps that it's at 55. There is no question. That makes it less insurmountable to do anything. Mm-hmm. And I think there are a lot of senators. I mean, what I love about the United States Senate is that you have 100 egos, all of whom think they can be the next president of the United States. And therefore, especially since it's going to be an open election in 2016, there may be a handful of Republicans who are eyeballing 2016, and this may be an opportunity for them to build a bridge with some of those Democratic senators to show and exercise leadership.
If I can jump in and make 2 quick points there. The first is that we've got an election coming up in 2014. If things don't get better, there are an awful lot more Democratic senators that are going to be up for re-election given that their success in 2008. And so they may be a little bit worried about
some
of these things,
too. That's what we heard about 2012, though, isn't it?
It is.
It turned out to sour on the Republicans.
It did, in part because it was a presidential year. And so a presidential year, you bring on in a lot of voters who aren't as engaged, where it may be, and again, it depends on who the Republicans pick as the opponents for these incumbents. It could be that 2014 is more like 2010 if things don't improve. Although if the economy continues on its slow but positive trend, then that's going to help a lot of these incumbents. So that's at least one thing to keep in mind.
Let's move over to the House quickly. The GOP lost a handful of seats in the House. Today, House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi told her fellow House Democrats she will run to keep her leadership position. And what is that signal going forward, Arnie?
Well, I'm not surprised that Nancy's going to continue to move forward, especially because I'm going to play the female card. This was such an important election for women. I think Nancy wanted to hold on to that position as the minority leader because it was really important to send the message and remind the Democratic base and remind independents that this was a party that elevated women to positions of authority. And I think she knows that. I mean, I'm not sure any Democratic leader could have made a difference. It's easy to marginalize who's ever sitting in that chair, but I think now between a much more refreshed United States Senate, now with obviously Barack Obama feeling like he does have a mandate, especially on the issue of taxes, Nancy Pelosi, I think, can really hold her troops together and move forward. So I think there's a lot of reason for her to stay. But you know what this feels like? This feels like rearranging the deck chairs. There really hasn't been a lot of change. You're not even going to see a lot of change in Barack Obama's executive branch. You're going to see the same faces but with different titles. So now the question is, what will the economy do? And I think Tim is absolutely right. That will dictate what happens 2 years from now.
Tim Hagel, a few things to pick up before we end our hour. I want to ask you about this. Paul Ryan, a young, vibrant leader, viewed that way at least before the election. Of course, what is his future?
Well, his stock is up despite having been on the losing ticket. His stock is up because of his national profile, although it was getting pretty high as the budget chairman. But for him, a lot's going to depend on what happens with the budget. Is he going to be able to convince people, keep people in the House together, the House Republicans together, convince maybe some Democrats? Are they going to find a way to go forward? And if that fails, then you know he still may be a leading member in the House, may someday get to be Speaker. Maybe he'll run for Senate in Wisconsin, something like that. But if he has, as I know some people would obviously think about him for presidential purposes, is very, very hard to run as a member from the House. And others have found that to be true. And even somebody who's been on the ticket doesn't necessarily have a leg up in that regard.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But Tim Ryan has a problem. He lost Janesville. He lost his county in Wisconsin, and he lost the state of Wisconsin. I know he was able to, you know, figure out a way to create a congressional district where he didn't lose, but it's really hard when you go home and you weren't the winner in Janesville, and it's really hard when you go home and you weren't the winner in Wisconsin. So he has to worry about keeping his House seat, perhaps, not just even look at the presidential. And that's got a lot of explaining to do to the American people. If they don't like you at home, then how do we like you as a possible potential presidential candidate? And some of his positions are extreme. Let me remind you that the reason why Congressman Aiken talked about legitimate rape is that he and Paul Ryan came up with a new term called forcible rape. And he just got
that's
the word.
That's not a new term.
Up.
That's a legal term that's been in existence for quite some time.
Well, depends on your jurisdiction, and it's a term of an antiquated term now that's even being pulled back on because people are beginning to understand what the term rape actually means.
I can't let the two of you go, Arnie and Tim, unless we get the comment about the big political story of the week. We haven't focused on this this hour, but the impact of the Petraeus scandal. What do you find most concerning about this case, Tim Hagel?
Well, for me, apparently Petraeus' affair began after he became CIA director, and I just can't imagine the lack of judgment that would have taken for somebody who's the head of the CIA to start a clandestine affair with somebody. That just boggles the mind.
Mm. Arnie?
Well, you have two very important, respected generals who are now in the middle of a real sort of seduction scandal. Someone referred to it at the Atlantic Monthly as they were trying to figure out how to name it, and they named it Call to Booty. That was the name, or Petraeus. I mean, we're actually coming up with names now. I think here are these men who are so focused on protecting us and understanding the nation of clandestine behavior, and look at how stupid they were when they used their emails. As someone said, I wish they could have licked a stamp or used a homing pigeon, because this is now bringing them down. They're not brought down based on their behavior on the battlefield. They're not brought down because they didn't protect someone. Now they're brought down because they acted like human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't understand
What about the fallout in terms of foreign policy, in terms of Afghanistan going forward?
There's always going to be fault, because these men are not only men, they also represent the United States, and they have tremendous historical memory. Remember, this is also important, too, because you don't want to lose these brains, let alone lose these men, because they understand the field of war. And look where Alan was going to. Alan was going to Europe next. So, again, these are the consequences that we have to consider, and then we have to start asking ourselves the question, is this worth replacing them? Because what we will lose in the way of security will be greater than what we lose because we've decided to marginalize them because of this affair.
Still in the field of foreign policy, we know Hillary Clinton will be leaving at some point in this second administration. I wonder your thoughts, Tim Hagel, on who we're likely to see here. John Kerry, a name thrown out there. Susan Rice, also. Colin Powell. Why not Colin Powell?
Ooh, I hadn't heard that one before. That'd actually be an interesting one. So he returned to the position. He supported, obviously, President Obama, so it would certainly fit in well there, I would think. And
probably wouldn't get
a lot of opposition in the Senate, whereas certainly Susan Rice would get a lot of opposition mm-hmm. by the Republican senators. Maybe less so John Kerry, at least for Secretary of State. He would probably get a little bit more opposition if he was put up for Secretary of Defense.
Mm-hmm. Well, here he's being put up for Secretary of Defense, and can I tell you who I'd like? If, again, reaching across the aisle, if I was going to be Barack Obama,
sure.
One, he's a little too old. old, but I would have loved it to be Lugar. John Huntsman might be another interesting choice for Secretary of State. So again, it would sort of show a vision to the future. It would also say, see, I do reach across the aisle. There are Republicans I can work with. Look at this position.
Let's end the hour where we began, and with your call on this last election a week in hindsight. Newsweek's latest cover story, I'm sure you've both seen it, has President Obama in some Napoleonic garb and asking the question on the cover, lucky general or master of the game? I'd like your answer on that before we go. Tim Hagel.
A little of both.
A little of both.
Yep.
Okay, so he got lucky in a couple. Hurricane Sandy, perhaps some of the luck in there too. What do you have to say, Arnie Arneson?
I think he needs to thank the women in his family and the women of America. And I think in the end, I think that made a huge difference. He was responsive to them. He understood that health care was important to them. He also understood that respect was important for them. And I think that that's not luck. That's recognizing where the future is.
Okay, thank you very much. Arnie Arneson, New Hampshire political analyst, former Democratic gubernatorial candidate. Thank you for joining us from New Hampshire, Arnie.
Ciao. You're welcome.
Tim Hagel, thank you for joining us, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Iowa. We appreciate, as always, having you here.
You're welcome.
I want to remind you that tomorrow on this program, people living in rural Iowa at times struggle for medical specialists as the nearest pediatrician, perhaps cardiologist, maybe hours from a patient's home. Maybe you live in a rural area and this concerns you. You want to listen tomorrow, perhaps participate in our program when we examine the state of rural health care in Iowa. Also, now that health care reform is the law of the land, how will health care change in Iowa tomorrow on this program? We hope you'll join us. River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury and Sarah Bowden. Production assistance today from Allison Sullivan. Technical support from Dennis Reese. The executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows is Catherine Perkins. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.